you have sent me the screenshot, and I was lolling where it was like, you might want to reach out to Allie. She has looked at this 23 times. Like, she seems to need urgent assistance.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Finding Mr. Height, the podcast. I'm Allie, back with my co-host, Rourke. Rourke, it is our one-year podcast anniversary, basically today.
Pew, pew, pew.
Pew, pew, pew. And by today, I mean like the day that the listeners are listening and not today, today.
True. We are celebrating our future.
Yes, we are. Future us, go. Go future us.
Love it. Love it. Go little rock star.
Yes.
It's very exciting. I can't believe it. I feel like so much has happened. Like, how wild.
So much has happened. It's nuts. Mm-hmm. Like, all just from like the first. So this is the one-year anniversary, to be clear, of our first official podcast episode. We did do that IG Live prior
That's
to
true.
That. But
That's
like
true.
That
we
was more
a,
just like
a
– yes, that was exactly. That was more of a soft launch. This is the one-year anniversary of our official launch. So much has happened. We've had so many amazing guests. And the Patreon has really taken off.
Yeah, a lot – like – being 1 year in, like I'm very proud of us. Like
I'm proud of us too.
I think it's great. Yeah. Speaking of the Patreon and one mm-hmm. year,
yeah.
Tell the people about how we're celebrating and or how they can participate in the celebration. Really,
yes. So we are going to be doing a giveaway where one lucky listener will get a 30-minute Zoom with the two of us to do whatever you want, whether that's look at your dating app profile or talk about a situation that you're dealing with, show us screenshots, hang out and chat, like literally whatever you want. It's your 30 minutes.
Love it.
Yeah. So we need to iron out exactly the details of how to enter in terms of like comment on this or share this or whatever. So we will do that. But look out on my Instagram for the post that announces it.
Perfect. I'm excited.
Me too. So what is going on? How has your Dallas dating been?
It's good. We actually, this is sort of perfect. Cause like, I would say that like last night was like a big success.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah. So I convinced this guy to come meet us out.
Is it the random guy? Not someone we've talked about before.
Correct.
Not like one of the guys you met before. Oh, okay.
New Bumble man. He knows about the podcast. I was just like telling him everything. Cause like, oh yeah. Okay. Wait. I want to, before I get into this, I want to take a step back and mm-hmm. talk about how I don't care anymore. And it's the best. Things are going so well because I don't give a fuck. And
great.
It's funny. Yeah. It's funny because just as we do with, if he wanted to, he would, right? Where here's an overused phrase and here's how it's gotten mutated in a way that we disagree with, right? Where mm-hmm. We both do not agree with the statement, like, whoever cares less wins or, like, yeah. don't reveal you care or you're not – whatever. That's not what I mean here. I mean, I just don't care what this person thinks of me, you know?
I'm glad that you made that distinction.
Yeah.
Because I think that's an important one. I'm totally with you.
Thank you. I had a feeling you would be, but so good.
Yes.
So I've now, I went on a drinks date last week with a guy and then I had this guy meet us out last night and I just was like, I'm not going to carry this date. I'm just going to be myself. I'm going to say who I am. And if they want to hang again, they want to fucking hang again. And I'm having so much of a better time. And like the dates are actually going better because I don't have this like performance that I'm doing. It's great.
I was actually about to say, you and I were talking recently about people feeling burned out because they feel like they're performing on dates. And at the time I asked you like, what if they stopped?
Exactly. And I'm stopping.
Like, what if you just stop performing? find out what will happen.
And so he knows about the podcast. I was talking about how he's going to need a nickname. He came up with one and I was like, that is much too long. I cannot remember what it was now. But
oh, I want to know what it was. Was it like multi-word?
Yeah. But I will say He walked home from the bar. Amy and I took an Uber, and I texted him when we got back. And I said, are you home safely as well? And he said, in about 5 minutes, but if you don't hear from me, you can call me the murdered one.
Oh, God.
Which was funny, I thought.
Oh, man.
He invited us to his friend's house to watch the Super Bowl today.
Oh, are you going to go?
Yeah. Yeah.
So fun.
Yeah, totally. And it was a great time. And he was like very cute and funny about like meeting up with us, where he was like, he's like, yeah, like I kind of asked my friends if they wanted to come with me. And they were like, let's see if you fall flat on your face. And then like, if it's going well, we'll come out.
So and is that what happened?
Yeah. So one of his friends did meet us out and hung out with him. He was very nice. It was actually really cute. The friend like complimented me on my outfit.
Mm-hmm.
And then the not murdered one, the alive man.
Yeah. He's now the alive one.
The alive man. That's his nickname. Actually, presumably. I haven't heard from him today. So, TBD. But anyway, it's still the morning. It's fine. The alive man then said to me, he was like, by the way, like, I heard my friend compliment you. And, like, I'm bummed that, like, he did it first. Because, like, you look great. Or, like, you look... It was, like, very cute. Sweet. He's like, I'm annoyed that he, like, got to do it first. But, yeah, he was just, like, a very, very sweet guy. Actually, reminds me a lot of the friend.
Really?
Yes. And... two of the people I was with last night have met the friend, and they, like, said it, too.
We haven't talked about the friend on – this is the regular pod.
I know, but we've, like, hinted that I talk about a friend on the Patreon, I think.
Okay, fine. Just wanted to raise that flag.
Yeah. So that was funny.
That is funny. Well, that's exciting. I love that.
Yeah, it's just, like – it's, like, feeling good and fun and, like, not complicated in, like, a nice way.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah. Yeah, what about you?
So I had a first date on Friday night.
Yeah.
We're calling him the Bulldog.
Great.
And it was really fun. I had a really good time with him. We went – we tried to go to this bar, this cocktail bar in New York called Death & Co., which I haven't been in years and years. But they don't take reservations anymore post-COVID. And so we went basically knowing that like it was a crapshoot of whether we were able to actually go or not. And it was a two-hour wait.
Oh my God, no.
Yeah, absolutely not. So there, I mean, it's the East Village. There's a bar on every corner. And so he had several other options. So we went one place that was standing room only, but we still got a drink. And then we went to Goodnight Sunny after that, which is one of my favorite cocktail bars in the city. It's in the East Village if you haven't been. And then we stayed there for a couple more drinks, shared some appetizers at the bar. It was very fun.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
I think, yeah, it was good. It was a good, like, first post-rower date, you know, getting back on the horse a little bit, even though I had been on a date while I was dating him. But I would definitely say yes if he asked me out again.
Yeah.
And he did text me yesterday and we like had a little back and forth. I don't think that I will actively pursue asking him out.
Okay.
Because as we've talked about, I think that although I'm totally into women asking out men and I asked the rower out on our second date, I think that because it breaks that gender norm, it indicates like a higher level of interest.
Yes.
That I'm not sure is there in this case. Not in necessarily a bad way.
Right.
Like I said, I will totally say yes and go out with him again if he asks.
Great.
Question that I meant to ask about the alive one.
The alive man.
When you mentioned that he knows about the podcast, did you give him the name of the podcast or does he just know about it in concept?
No, he knows everything.
Oh, that's hysterical. So hello, alive man. You're listening right now, probably.
Yeah, alive man might be listening. We don't know. I'll find out. I hope he forgot. I don't know. I showed him the podcast app because he like wanted
Highly unlikely that he forgot.
Well, like I said, the Super Bowl invite might be revoked. I have not heard from him today. I texted him. I don't know if the dating scene is like better, if the guys are better. I don't know what it is. Maybe I just got lucky with like these two guys that I've gone out with. But I had asked the alive man what Amy and I could bring.
Mm-hmm.
And I sent him a screenshot of this like dip that I've made before that is very good. And he said, I was going to send you this. May as well do it now. Oh, shit. He just texted me.
Oh, shit.
Okay, perfect. Anyway, but look at this, Allie. How fucking on brand is this guy for you and I? It is a spreadsheet with everything that everyone is assigned to bring to the Super Bowl party.
That's incredible.
I love this guy.
Are you and on the spreadsheet?
No. He sent it to me to be like, because I threw out, like I said, I threw out an option to bring. And he was like, I was going to send you this. Might as well do it now. Sent me the screenshot of the Excel.
Yeah.
Oh, this is really cute. I said, thank you, one, for coming out last night, and two, letting me bully myself into your Super Bowl plans. Please let us know what would actually be most helpful to bring. I threw out that dip on a whim. We're truly happy to do anything. And he said, I'm just happy you haven't reconsidered.
That's cute. Oh, I love that. Live, man. I'm excited adorable. For this party.
Thank you. I'm excited to report back.
Will you send me a picture of him? I want to see what he looks like.
Oh, yeah, for sure. The Patreon people will hear it before. This man is actually a good example of a very true, he is not lying about being 6 feet. He like is exactly 6 feet.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, because I had on little heels last night and he and I were like head to head.
This actually reminds me of another update that I have. And I also have two phone throwing moments that I want to get to before we transition to our guest. So I decided, so as we've discussed, my height filter typically on dating apps is 6'2".
Yep.
And I decided sort of on a whim, and I've done this before, but I decided sort of on a whim a couple days ago to bring it down to 6'1".
Mm-hmm.
And I specifically did that with the intention of then going through my beeline to be like, let me just see all of the people that are in this bucket that have liked me already.
Yeah.
That I was not seeing. Because as we've discussed –
that's a really good idea.
Yeah. So like I think this is actually a good strategy because as we've discussed, even if you have – at least on most of the major dating apps, even if you have a specific filter that means that you're only seeing people that fall into it, your profile is being shown to people that don't fall into your filters. Mm-hmm. And also people should know that when they're looking at people, like the guys that I'm seeing, they might never see me.
Yeah.
I might not fall into their filters. So all that being said, when I brought it down to 6'1", I had like – 75. Yeah, like people in my beeline because it's been that way for forever.
Is this when you realized the thing about education too?
No, that was before.
Okay.
No, that was before. I did that. I'm now talking to a few people that are 6'1", but you also reminded me of something else about my date with the bulldog, which is that we started talking about height and he asked me a question. I think it was I forget exactly what he said, but it was basically just asking if like I've encountered people that are lying about their height.
Yeah.
And he's like, and I'm sure you would know that because you are tall. So they are either going to be taller than you or not. And I'm like, yeah, you're very right. And he then said, I'm 6'2 with my shoes and 6'1 without.
Yeah.
And I was like, no. And I already knew that.
Yeah.
But
I've already assessed that. Thank you.
I said to him, I was like, just so you know, height is supposed to be just your body. Like your yes. shoe height changes. Like I can't wear 4-inch heels and then say I'm 6'3".
Correct. Correct.
Like I like put 6'3 on my dating app and then be like, oh, but only in 4-inch heels. Like that's not how height works.
No, not
and
at all.
I've said this before that I think that men think they're supposed to include their shoes, and this just solidified that opinion.
Legit proof, yeah.
Yeah. So, and I was perfectly okay with his height. That is the reason that I filter at 6'2 and above, because I was also wearing a little bit of a heel and we were eye to eye.
Yeah.
So, anywho, but my two phone throwing moments. One, I decided to unmatch the rower.
Oh, okay.
Because he is, as we've discussed, he's very far down in my matches, but I was looking for somebody else and he came up and I was like, you know what? It's better for him not to be here.
Yeah.
And so I was going to unmatch him and it wouldn't let me click unmatch. I kept clicking it and nothing was happening.
What the fuck?
Yeah, it was very weird. And actually somebody in my comments said something recently and asked me if that's ever happened to me. And at the time I said no.
And now, yeah.
Now, that's yeah. So like I was weird. Literally clicking the word unmatch. I closed the app. I reopened it. I tried over and over again. I finally had to block and report him.
Dead.
Luckily. Dead.
What did you say too?
Well, luckily there are now more options. And so you can say like, I just don't want to see this person anymore.
Great.
And so that is what I did. But like,
that's so fucking funny.
Oops, I had to report it because it wouldn't let me unmatch him.
I would have loved if there was a space for free narrative where you could be like, did not want to be exclusive. Like, I would die.
Not ready for a relationship.
Yeah. This man should, like, please override whatever he says and put something casual. Oh, dead.
So that was my first phone throwing moment. And then my second was that, so I'm going out with another matchmaker match. I have a second matchmaker match that we're going out week after next because he's currently out of town. And then when he gets back, I will be gone because I'm going to San Diego for President's Day.
Right. Yes. And so we're going to be close to family.
Yes. My time to be close to family per the psychic. So I'll be going out with him next Friday, not this upcoming Friday, but I guess actually when the listeners hear this, I'm going out with him this Friday.
Yep.
And so I haven't talked to him or anything yet. He's not going to reach out until it gets closer because I think I said this before that my matchmaker and I decided that given a couple of the experiences I've had that she is going to be coordinating the date that I'm going out on, like the night that I'm going out
she's
on
like your
with my match.
Booker.
Yes, exactly. So like she asked me for my availability that week. I gave it to her. He's free that Friday. He already asked her if he should make a reservation somewhere. Like if this Friday work. Yeah. So which maybe means we're going to dinner, but cocktail bars take reservations sometimes.
True.
Anyway, so she sent me an email to tell me that. And she, instead of replying to my email back to her, she replied to an automated email that she was sent about how like I had opened her message because she has this, and I knew this already. She has like a service that tells her when somebody has opened her email or not, which I knew because she told me about it when she told me that Eminem had ghosted her too.
Ah.
And so like, it makes sense that she has it because she's totally. Like, she also, I think one of the reasons she has it is to understand someone's level of flakiness when she's trying to assess them as a match. So like, is this person not responding to me because they just haven't opened it yet? Or are they not very responsive?
Yeah.
Like that's an important metric for her. However, when I scroll down to see that, I also noticed that it told her how many times I had opened the email, and I reread her emails so often because I like want to absorb the information again, or I want to go back and see the guy, or like whatever. And so now I'm so embarrassed that she knows that I've opened her email like 4 times.
Yeah, so you have sent me the screenshot, and I was lolling where it was like, you might want to reach out to Allie. She has looked at this 23 times. Like, she seems to need urgent assistance. It was so fucking funny.
I'm so embarrassed.
Did you explain to her, like, oh, like, I just reread these. Like, I swear.
I didn't acknowledge. I didn't acknowledge.
Oh, my God, you didn't? Oh, that's
no, funny. I just replied and didn't say anything. But now I'm like, shit, like now I got to be more careful. And now I'm going to screenshot her emails so that I can open up the screenshots. I don't think she cares.
I don't think she cares. She doesn't. Yeah, there's no way she can care.
No, but I do feel – I do actually kind of feel bad because if she's getting an email every time I open one of her emails, that's very annoying.
If she was annoyed, I think she would tell you.
Or she would filter them or something.
Yeah.
It's not my fault. It's not my fault she has this service. Like I shouldn't
No, you should
plan
not
my behavior around –
No, a service that she chooses to use. No.
Yes. But I was embarrassed. Hilarious. Anyway, that was my week. In addition to a third phone throwing moment that the patrons know about that I won't be sharing here.
Yeah.
So it was just a phones going. Yeah, privacy. For privacy reasons. Phones going everywhere. But I'm very excited to introduce our guest today.
Perfect. Yeah. Tell us about
it. Her name is Laura Behnke. She is a TV sports reporter who turned coach. Based on her own timeline of dating, which we will talk to her about, she has turned into a coach for women to feel more empowered about owning their own timeline and really, you know, shaking off the weight of society's expectations. I'm so excited to talk to her. She also just had a baby, which is amazing. We're gonna get into it.
Mazel. Love it. Can't wait. Okay.
Let's chat with Laura.
See you Yeah. See you over there with her.
So something that I have started incorporating into my daily routine is our new sponsor, Happy Mammoth, and specifically taking their Hormone Harmony. It is plant-based, it is nature-inspired, and it is herbal. I'm a little conscious. So I want to make sure I know what am I putting in my body. I want to be taking the right type of things. They have got it down at Happy Mammoth.
Yeah, they're really dedicated to making women's lives easier. And that means only using science-backed ingredients that have been proven to work for women. They really make no compromise when it comes to quality. I have really been appreciating it for when I'm feeling like a little off or down around that time of the month. Because I have an IUD, I don't get a period. So it often surprises me when I'm at that time of the month. And this has really helped level me out in those times.
Yeah, it makes it a lot easier to manage PMS, their estrogen control specifically. It also is helpful if you're going through menopause or premenopause as well.
So for a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use our code FMH at checkout.
That's happymammoth.com and use the code FMH for 15% off today.
See you there. And we are back with Laura. Hi, Laura. Welcome to Finding Mr. Hyde, the podcast.
Hey, Allie and Rourke. It's so great to be here with you. Thanks for having me.
We are so pumped.
Our Super Bowl Sunday.
Yes. I know. We originally scheduled this during the Super Bowl. Like, none of us were thinking about
it. None of us realized. Yes. So
the 49ers aren't in. I don't care.
I'm out. Yeah. I like didn't even think about it. We always record on Sunday nights. And then all of a sudden earlier in the week, I texted Rourke and was like, SOS.
Well, and I used to be a sports reporter for 16 years. And I mean, we scheduled this a few months back. So I guess I wasn't really thinking Super Bowl, but it never crossed my mind.
It's also late this year, to be fair.
It is. Yeah. That one is week true. Later.
Mm-hmm. But yeah.
So before we get into everything we're excited to chat with you about, we want to do our Weird or Nah segment with you, which actually is themed related to what we're going to talk about.
Ooh.
So this week's Weird or Nah is they haven't had a quote unquote official relationship at age 35. And the listeners will find out why this is themed in a moment. But first things first, what do y'all think the split was? What percent weird, what percent nah?
Well, there's what I hope it would be, but then there's what I think it probably is. My guess is there's definitely more who think it's weird. Maybe like a 65-35 weird versus
I think that's a great – I was like right around 60-40 because I think that there are audiences that would think it's even weirder, frankly, but our audience is pretty – like down for this type of thing in terms of timeline differences. And so I think 60-40 is a damn, like 65-35 is a damn good guess. I think my general take on it is one of those things where, and we talk about this a lot, Laura, Allie and I, there's a difference between like something that is weird because society has certain expectations, right? But then weird is versus like as not desirable. So to me, somebody who's 35 and has never had a quote unquote official relationship is not desirable. Is it weird according to the timeline that we have been told is a thing? Yes. And so, you know, like that's sort of the dynamic here where I think that like I personally would be interested in that. However, there are all types of relationships that people can have that are smaller than quote unquote official, right? Like that doesn't mean you've never dated or had feelings for someone or like know what it's felt like to be hurt or to be vulnerable or whatever. So I would want to explore that with the person that I was dating, but I don't think it's weird personally. But 60-40, yeah. I like her guess a lot.
I think there's also like the definition of weird that can literally mean like in the minority.
Right.
Yes.
Where like this is definitely in the minority.
Yes.
Like, but does that make it like, ooh, weird? Like, like you said, Rourke, undesirable? I don't think so. My guess was going to be around there too, like before I put up the poll, and it is 57% weird, 43% nah. So you guys amazing. Are right on the money.
Right.
Yeah. I also think like Rourke said, one, our audience is down. Like they understand these kinds of things. Two, I think just by nature of the type of account that it is, there are a lot of people in the audience that fall into that group or were, you know, have, you know, felt like they were late bloomers or, you know, as society deems them.
Exactly. Yes.
So, and in the explanations, most people who said nah said exactly what we're saying here, which is like, there are a multitude of reasons why that might be the case, and let's talk about it. And then the people who were said, who said weird, mostly said, why?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
With like a skeptical face.
I have a guy friend who's 30, and up until recently, he had never had someone to call his girlfriend. And he was very, very, very self-conscious about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I probably would be too. Yeah, and I was up until I had one. But I think, yeah, I mean, we're going to get into all of this. So this, I think, is a beautiful segue to Laura. Please, we would love to hear your origin story.
Yeah,
as it relates to this.
Well, this is very appropriate. That is a question that you asked that is very near and dear to my heart, because you know, as Rourke was just saying, her friend who felt very self-conscious about not having a relationship at 30, I was 35 and a half. And I say that half because when you get to that point, every month feels like it matters. So at 35 and a half, I had never had a boyfriend. I had never had a serious relationship. I had dated, of course, but nothing more than 3 or 4 dates with one person. I did a couple of long distance things, which ended up kind of going more like 2 months, but I would not say it was like a 2 month relationship because we never saw each other, and it was not, they were never my boyfriend. I
love
never...
the like sneering face that you're making when you say these long distance situations.
And so I was 35 and a half when I met the man who is now my husband. And oh my goodness, those 35 and a half years of asking myself constantly, what is wrong with you? Why are you the only person you know who has never had a relationship? I had plenty of single girlfriends, but they'd all had relationships at some point. And so you just like, the thing I always said to myself was, you know, there's one common denominator in all of these failed experiences you've had, and it's you. So it has to be your fault. You have to be doing something wrong. And I didn't need anybody else to tell me that they thought being 35 and single was weird, because I was telling myself constantly that this is weird.
The call was coming from inside the house.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Oh my God. And the panic then sets in. And, you know, I also couldn't understand it. So I'm like, I think I'm a good person. I think that I'm worth being
like,
around.
I'm very likable.
I have friends. Yeah. I don't have like, you know, a third arm. Like I'm a pretty regular person. And so what the heck is going on? At the time I was a sports reporter. I was a TV sports reporter for 16 years. So like every guy says, oh, I want a girl who likes sports. I want a woman who cares about what's going on the field. I can watch games with. I'm like, hi.
You're like, hello. Hello, sir.
So question. That's is your me. Husband a big? Is your husband now a big sports fan?
You know, so my husband's from England.
Oh,
so he is. He's actually watching rugby right now.
I was going to say, does he like footy?
yes, and the soccer, the football.
I'm sure what he would consider real football.
Exactly. As he likes to say. So he's been in the U.S. for 15. Almost 20 years at this point.
Oh, wow.
Something he's been out of the UK for quite a while. So he has adopted American sports. But he was a huge athlete himself. He played rugby. He did, rowing, all these things in England. And so, yes, he's a sports fan, but he's also not, he would be absolutely fine with sitting down and watching soccer or football, American football all day or not at all. And so it's kind of
ideal, frankly.
Yeah. Yeah. But what I realized so often with men who wanted a woman who loves sports is what they actually wanted was a woman who was going to be okay if they sat on the couch all day on Sunday and just watched wall to wall football, and the woman didn't care and just let them do it and got them a beer here and there, I guess. If I sat down and was like, oh, well, that was, and I start talking about things and
they're like,
actually,
yeah, now they're like, wait a minute.
Wait a minute. If they could say something and I would know what they said was inaccurate, they don't want that.
Yeah.
They don't want that. Also, I spent my days in a locker room with very fit professional athletes that was very intimidating for a lot of guys.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
Intimidating. And I'm like, I don't want to marry a professional athlete. Like, you have nothing to worry about. But the fact that that was the world I was in could be very, very intimidating to people, I guess. So, me being a huge sports fan did not in any way help. Who knew? It was a rough go. And when I did finally meet my husband, you know, there was a lot, and I'm sure, you know, we can get into all of this more, but there was a lot of feelings of like, what do I tell him? How in depth mm-hmm. do I go with what my experience or lack of experience is? What will he think of this? Will I be prejudged? And I had really come to a place in my life where I was finally comfortable with who I was and what my story was and what my unique timeline actually looked like. So prior to meeting him, everybody else that I met, that fear of what is he going to think of me for never having had a relationship was so raw, and it was so upfront. And so the way I usually compensated for it was I just told him. I was like, I'm going to tell you everything right now, and I'm going to let you know that I've never had a relationship. I'm going to get it all out on the table, and then hopefully you won't run away. And I think I did it because I wanted the guy to be like, oh, it's okay. It's okay. I was looking for that validation. And a lot of times guys did not know what to do with that information. And I dated a few guys who just like emotionally couldn't handle it. And they were not my person. Like, clearly they were not my person. But again, I looked at that as, well, this is my fault. They can't handle it because I'm weird. I've had this bizarre timeline that has happened that is not normal. And so this is my fault. And I had guys that actually, I had one, the one I dated a little bit, but right before I met my husband, which actually ended up being about 9 months before I met my husband, he used it against me. Loved this idea that I had never had a boyfriend and that he could be the first. I don't know if he ever cared about me in any way, but it was this weird. He was messed up.
He had issues.
I don't like that at all.
He just wanted to get to a point where I would say, yes, you are my boyfriend. And he asked me all the time, do you think I'm your boyfriend yet? I'm like, why are we having these conversations?
It was like he was fetishizing being your first boyfriend.
Yes. Very strange. Weird. Like, ooh, I'll finally tame this one. Like, that was the reason I didn't have a boyfriend. It was bizarre. And gross. As soon as I kind of was like, well, okay, maybe – he literally ghosted me. So
dead.
Yeah.
I hate that that's like so fucking predictable. But like, oh my God. Because he was like the literal definition of the chase.
That's
like
all
somebody
wanted.
Who was just in it because he thought he couldn't have it. But it's really interesting that you, Laura, that you're talking about not caring about what somebody thinks about your experience, because Rourke and I literally just in the segment before this where we do our little like dating life updates. We were just talking about letting go of other people's expectations of us and how freeing that can be.
Yeah. I said that I've had better dates recently because I've just sort of said, I am not going to perform in any way. I am just going to be myself. I'm going to say this stuff about me. Like the example was like, I told a guy last night, like, all about this podcast, and was like, what do you want your nickname to be? Like, what do you, and then he like made a joke about it later. Like, you know, like, and great. He can handle it. He can hang. Yeah. And like, that's awesome. And to your point, the right people will be able to receive us and hang with us in that way.
Exactly. It's so true. I mean, there are all these, I'm so against dating rules. I hate them. I absolutely hate them.
Preach. You're on the right podcast.
Oh my God. All of the people who tell you, this is what you have to do. This is what you're doing wrong. And it's this one size fits all, this idea of, well, this is how you play the game. And it's such bullshit. And all it does is make you feel like you are doing something wrong. You are screwing something up. Well, here's the thing. If you play somebody else's game, if you follow the rules that someone else set, who are you actually being with this person? Like, are you yourself? At what point do you get to be yourself? Like, okay, you've now hooked them and you've drawn them in and they really like you and things are clicking, but you have reacted and behaved in every way that is not your natural instinct. Who do they like? And who do right. you like? Do you actually like this person? If they like a different version of you, like why? Well,
then also, like at some point, you're going to have to be you.
Yes.
And then and if then they what? Like, right, if they liked this performative version of you, then like more likely than not, things are going to end when they discover that's not who they're dating.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, the facade has to crumble at some point.
Yeah.
Right.
Wouldn't you rather find that out right away by being yourself and they don't like it? And yeah, that's painful and that doesn't work, but that's not your person. That is not your person.
And honestly, when that happens, it's not even their fault. Like to be like, oh, he didn't like the real me. Well, you didn't give him a chance to know the real you. So we can't really be mad.
Yeah. It's so, so true. And I had to, it took me almost 35 and a half years to finally realize what I was doing, that I was doing everything I could to be the person I thought somebody else wanted. And I finally came to this conclusion a few months before I met my husband was I realized that I had been telling myself that my future hinged on a husband and kids and that life, and that was the key to everything the future held. And so because I didn't have it, because I was single, because I didn't even have a boyfriend, my future was kind of this blank void, because in my mind, it couldn't really start until I had those things. And so no wonder I was terrified of being single. My single future was a blank hole, and that's terrifying. And then this pressure of, you have to meet him now, because that future, like you're getting older, that future is coming at you. And if there's nothing there, like what does your life even mean? And I finally realized that, wait a minute. There's not just one future that's out there. Like what if I never meet somebody? Right. What if I am alone for the rest of my life? And that is a loaded thing. I used to tell myself that all the time. I'm going to be alone for the rest of my life.
But you're not.
I have friends. I have family. I have a job. Like I leave my house. Like I'm not alone. But I would tell myself that if you don't have a boyfriend or a partner or a husband or whatever, you're alone. Which was also terrifying. And when I realized that if that happened, if I never had that romantic connection, what could my life look like? And I finally allowed myself to start thinking about that and to give myself permission to have a future. Okay, so what could I do? I could do whatever I wanted. I could live wherever I wanted. I could make impulsive decisions. I never needed anybody else's opinion. Also, you know, when you're in a relationship with somebody, you have to take them into consideration. That's just how it works. You know, and this idea of like, wait a minute, I can literally do whatever I want. Whatever I want within reason of it.
Within legal bounds. And
there was like an epiphany for me, and I didn't realize until, you know, probably a couple of years later, just exactly what the process was that I had gone through, which is now what I work with so many single women on. I did it after 35 and a half years of really struggling. I think I was just tired of it. I was just tired of struggling. And so I realized that I had been just being ruled by these fears that I had. And for me, it was the fear of being single and alone for the rest of my life. And so when I finally gave myself that permission that I told myself, you can survive that if you're alone for the rest of your life. You will be okay. So how will you be okay? And then I could start thinking about, okay, well, what if I did this? I had a nephew at the time. I knew that my brother and his wife would have more. What if I don't have my own children, but I get to be the best aunt ever? What if I move to live closer to them, and I can be the super cool aunt, and I don't have to worry about paying for college, and I don't have to worry about, you know, changing diapers if I don't want to, and I can still sleep my 8, 9, 10 hours a night if I want. Maybe that's not so bad. And I just all of a sudden this my future opened up, and it felt like it had potential. And that was life-changing for me. I think that fear of this nothingness had been ruling me so much. And when I finally said, you know what? I have to accept that it might not happen. And that took so much pressure off of me. So when I met my husband about 6 weeks later. And when I met him, I knew for the first time going into a first date, for the first time ever, I was like, I don't need this. I want this, but I don't need this. If he's terrible, if this doesn't work out, I'm going to be okay. I'm really going to be okay. And so I am convinced that when I walked into that first date, he is the first man who actually went out on a date with me, not the me I was trying to be, but who I actually was. And we talk about that too. And he was like, oh yeah, like I knew who you were right away. You know, like he never felt
and he
like,
liked it.
Yeah. And, yeah, and clearly. Here we are. Here we are. So it's been almost 7 years since we met. And, you know, that's the type of person you want. You want the person, your person, to love and to accept and to embrace who you actually are. Because this isn't just a relationship for right now. This isn't just so that you can be like, yep, I have a boyfriend, or, oh, I'm engaged, I'm getting married. This is the rest of your life, hopefully. So don't you want this to be the person that you can actually, like, let's think about what it means to spend the rest of your life with somebody. That's not a little thing.
A lot of time.
Oh, it's yeah, dear God.
A lot.
Life is longer than people are like, life is short. Life is not
no,
short.
No, life is very long.
So true.
That's a lot of minutes with that
and
person.
During COVID and during all of this, like everybody locked up in their houses, you know, this is when you really realize just how much a lifetime together is when you're spending every waking moment together.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny that you say I could do whatever I want, because when I broke up with my last serious boyfriend, we call him the Oyster. When I broke up with him, one of the reasons that I gave him, although there were a lot, but one of the reasons that I said is because he wanted to move to the suburbs, to Connecticut, have a wife and babies like immediately. Like he wanted that. And that's not where I was at, nor still am at the time, specifically the suburbs part. And he asked me, he said, well, Allie, what's your plan? And what he meant by that was like, well, if you're not going to keep dating me, and like, if you're not going to move to the suburbs and marry someone and have kids, like, what are you going to do? As if
there's nothing else.
Whatever I fucking want to do.
And I literally said to him, whatever I want.
Yeah.
And he was confused by that. But like, that's why he wasn't right for me. It's because like he was very, I mean, there were a lot of reasons why he wasn't right for me, but one of them is because he subscribed to this very rigid idea of what life looks like at certain times. Yeah.
And the thing is, we all, you know, everything changes too. We are our priorities and the things we want, and we need change, but we still have to operate under what it is that we want at that time. You know, like maybe so I live in the Bay Area right now. I live in the suburbs in the Bay Area. I worked in the Bay Area, but I lived I was here in San Francisco. I was working at the NBC, the local NBC station, 12-ish years ago, something like that. And so I lived in San Francisco, and I loved the city. I was in Russian Hill. If you're familiar with the San Francisco neighborhoods,
and
it was
area.
Awesome. Yeah, it is. And I was a city girl for sure. After San Francisco, I lived in New York for 10 years.
Oh, amazing.
And, I remember being in San Francisco and working here and talking to somebody who lived in Walnut Creek, which is in the East Bay, which is I now live in the East Bay, in a suburb in the East Bay. And I remember thinking, ugh, gross. Why? Like, what is out there? Oh my God. Somebody please shoot me if I ever decide I want to move to Walnut Creek. Like, what is, oh, that's terrible. I was 28, 29 at the time. And, you know, 10, 11, 12 years later, I was like, yes, please give me the suburbs, give me a pool in the backyard, and give me like all that stuff. So things change. But oh my God, when I was that age, living in San Francisco, thinking that Walnut Creek was a death sentence, which it's not, it's a lovely area, and somebody had wanted to move there who I was dating, that was not my path. That I still needed over a decade in a city before I was ready to not do that. And so, oh my God, how miserable would it have been if I had said, oh yeah, that's like, I'm going to go do this on your timeline, even though this is so not what I want right now. So good
Completely.
For you, Allie.
And I appreciate that. And I was like, actually considering, like, before I made that decision, I was like, We were talking about what an interim could be. Like we were looking at like – you lived here, so maybe you'll know, like Yonkers, like places that are like suburb-ish but close enough to the city. Oh, my God. I would have been so unhappy.
Miserable. Yeah, miserable. And it's tough because that is such – a normal track that you're supposed to take, that there is a part of you that is like, well, what's, is there something wrong with me that that's not what I want right now? The good thing about New York is there are so many people who never leave New York like that. Like, so it is still, there's a normalized, you're a city person forever type of thing. But then you still feel like, or at least I did, well, then I need to be a city person with kids and a husband and I have to do all of that.
Yeah. So I don't get to escape all the timelines just because it's okay to be here.
I'm just not going to go live in, you know, Orange, New York. So, or Orange, New Jersey. So, you know, that's just, that's not my path. But yeah, there's just so many things that because it's so normal in society that when we're not following it, it's so easy to wonder what am I doing wrong? Is there something like missing here? Like what is it that is making me weird?
Yeah. I think here's what my fear is. I'll tell you. So we, Allie and I on our Patreon feed do, reality recaps and we are doing Love is Blind right now.
Oh yes.
So good.
We're watching
so good.
It.
Mm-hmm. And one of a woman named Natalie in the first episode says she really figured out that she wanted a partner when she saw how her grandfather cared for her grandmother when her grandmother had Alzheimer's. Mm-hmm. And she's like, I want that love and care and support. And that is what I think about a lot. And because I certainly have friends, I feel a little sort of like I'm alone, prove me wrong type about this, where I have lovely parents, but I'm an only child with zero extended family. And my parents are older. They're going to turn 70 this year and I'm 32. And so like they had me a little later in life. And then all of my friends are either in very serious relationships or married. And so like I am, when my parents pass away, I will be number one on zero people's priority list. And that's okay. That's just is what it is, right? That's the landscape of my situation right now. And so like that's, I guess, my fear. Or like I have a very full good life where I'm super like ambitious with work. I do not feel like I'm looking into a void at all.
Yeah.
But that is something that I think about.
Yeah. And that's a common thing. That is something I hear with a lot of the women that I work with. They think about like, yeah, I'm okay. I can do anything that I want, but there is this worry and this fear of, well, growing older and what do we do? And there's also a camp of people who are like, well, if you don't have children, who's going to take care of you? Which is like, if that's why you're having children,
But
it's a real, that's a real concern. Like that is so real.
I guess I could just pay someone, right? Like I could get a caretaker.
That is very, very true.
Because you won't have had kids to spend money on. So you're going to have plenty of it.
There we go.
But the other thing I'll say about that is, so we assume then if we get married, and we go on that problem is now solved. My father passed away 2 years ago and he was only 66. And so my mom is now she was 67 when he passed. She's facing that exact same thing. Mm-hmm. And she did everything the way she was supposed to.
Great point. That's a great counter.
She met my dad at 20. They had me at 27 just because sorry, it's still early in the morning, I guess. I have to keep clearing my throat. They had me when they were 27 because it took them a little while to conceive. Had my brother a year later, lived in the suburbs, did all the things.
Yeah.
And now my mom is facing the same thing. And it is a huge fear that she has as well. She's afraid of getting older by herself, of course. So, you know, and that is not to take away at all that concern and that fear, because that's real and I get that. And that deserves to be acknowledged.
You're describing my life also, Laura.
Yeah.
My dad passed away 3 years ago and they met very young and my mom is facing the same thing.
Yeah. So we have this idea that once we just meet that person, then everything's going to be okay.
Right.
And that the truth of the matter is that life just happens. You know, we have no clue how this is going to go. And I told myself for years, once you finally meet that person, once you finally have that relationship, everything's going to be okay. Now everything will make sense. And the crazy part is, like, I love my husband. He is my person. And I am so, when I met him, I just realized how wrong everyone else was. But since meeting him, since getting married, I would say I have had the hardest several years of my life. 2 weeks after our wedding, we found out that his father was diagnosed with cancer.
And I'm so sorry.
4 weeks after that, we found out my dad was.
Oh my gosh.
My father-in-law passed away a year later. On the day of his funeral, when we were in England, which we had had to go out unexpectedly and thankfully made it in time. We were in England. It was the day of my father-in-law's funeral. We found out my dad was terminal.
Oh my God.
And meanwhile, I'm 38 at this point, 39. We needed to start a family if we were going to. And my husband has a genetic condition that had never been diagnosed because it is incredibly rare, but it meant that we were going to have to do IVF so that we could do genetic testing to eliminate any embryos that were affected. But we first had to get him diagnosed, and that took me, and I say me because I was the one who did most of the work. It took me about a year to get him diagnosed because it turns out there's only two doctors in the country that can do it.
Holy crap.
Yeah. Luckily, one was in Boston. It was while we were in New York, and now one is out here at Stanford. So we're in good hands at this point. But so we're dealing with my a whole lot of heartache, and I needed to go home to Minnesota, which is where I'm from originally, to help my parents. My dad passed away a few months after that diagnosis, and doing all of that while also trying to think: Are we going to have a kid? How do we do all of this? We actually met for the first time once we got the diagnosis, once we did all that, we met for the first time with our IVF, our original IVF clinic in New York. We met with that doctor on December 2nd, 2019. On December 3rd, my dad was told there was nothing that they could do and he entered hospice. And so I remember being at home, you know, helping my parents and getting a call from the IVF doctor who was like, I haven't heard back from you. And I was like,
You're like, we have to put this on pause.
Like, I'm a little busy.
We got to put this stuff on pause. Then COVID happened. And so we were grieving my dad during this bizarre, most bizarre time in all of our lives. Our first round of IVF was supposed to start on March 17th. And on March 16th is when New York shut all elective procedures down. And actually all IVF clinics, everybody basically.
Yeah. I was supposed to go through egg freezing around that time.
Okay. There you go.
Had to put it on pause.
Yep. Everything paused. And I'm like, I am 40 at this point, and I know that my eggs are not getting stronger. That's just not how it works, unfortunately. And so then we went through four rounds of IVF. Three of them failed. The fourth one, we finally had one healthy embryo. And now she's 8 weeks old. And so, you know, these
congratulations.
Thank you. It's, the whole point in me telling all of that is not so anybody's like, oh, you know, poor you, I don't need sympathy, but I met my person. I was happy. I found all of that. And life did not just go
ease
according
up
to plan.
Yeah.
Like it's never going.
It all kept coming at you.
Right. It wasn't like the gates just opened and then you were like, and it's wonderful now.
Oh, yeah. And I'll say the same thing about having a baby. You know, this thing that I wanted for so, so, so long. And everybody tells you it's the most amazing thing. You fall in love with this baby the minute you hold it. Your life is never the same. You've never known a love like this before, which is something I always resented. And I still do not like it. I do not tell people without children that unless they have children, they will never know this kind of love. That's bullshit. Like you are capable of love and very strong love, even if it's never with a child. Amen. I just want to get that out there. But holy crap, this is hard. And it's not, you know, my birth did not go the way we expected at all. It went basically the opposite. And so there was some trauma in there that I had to process. I did not feel an immediate connection with her. Part of that had to do with the birth because I expected it to go one way. And then when I'm in the operating room having a C-section and I can't even see her for the first several minutes of her life, it's not quite what I expected. And it took some time for me to feel how I feel about her now. And my husband, you know, has had the same types of experiences as well. Like, life is unpredictable. It's going to do what it's going to do. And no matter what milestone we're trying to get to, we never get to a point where all the things we have to worry about are just gone and everything is smooth sailing. And, you know, how boring would that be though? If you did finally get that thing and now you're like at the top of the mountain and there's nowhere else to go, you know, like that, this is, we're living life for a reason, you know, to experience all the things that happen and to keep striving for things and to keep, you know, hoping, trying to make everything a little bit better and to keep going. And so that's the way it is, no matter what happens, no matter what you achieve, no matter what timeline you follow, there's always going to be challenges. There's always going to be struggles and there's always going to be joys and happiness that you didn't expect.
Yeah.
Yeah. I want to go back for a minute to when you were first dating your now husband and kind of talking through, you know, you mentioned that the way that you would approach not having had an official relationship before was just like word vomit in a sense of like, here it all is. I'm curious how you shifted your mindset and approached it differently.
Yeah.
With him. Like, what did that look like?
Well,
wait, can I interject something really fun? Yeah. Something random first. Did you see that movie? I think HBO Max maybe did it. The like Barb and Star Go to Vista Del Mar.
I did not. But I know what you're talking about.
Because the crux of it is that like Chris Evans wants to be an official couple with the Kristen Wiig character. And he only uses the phrase official couple the entire time. Like he doesn't use like boy. And like it just like kills me that like I just keep thinking about like, and then like, how did you tell him you'd never had an official couple?
Official. I've never been one half.
I've never been in an official couple.
Never been a half.
Anyway, sorry.
Oh, no, that's good. Well, it all kind of tied into finally feeling good and confident in who I was, which made me feel like I did not have to explain myself to anybody, and which also made me realize that there are certain things that don't have to be anybody else's business unless I want them to. And if I decide they're nobody's business right now, I can change my mind on that later if they have proven to be worthy of hearing more about my experiences. So I made the decision before I met him that I wanted all past relationships off the table to start, at least certainly for me. I was not going to talk about it. And I think I said it to him pretty quickly within our first couple of dates. I was like, I don't want to talk about the past. I honestly don't really care what your dating past is. I want to get to know you now. And I don't really want to talk about what I have, you know, my experiences either, because I don't think it matters. I don't think it has anything to do with our future and our potential success or not. And he was like, fine, cool. I don't want to talk about mine either. He was divorced and, you know, there was a lot of pain and a lot of things that he had been through as well that he didn't want to talk about right off the bat either. So he was totally fine with that. And, you know, there are some people, if I had said, I don't really want to talk about my past relationships, who would have thought that was a red flag. And cool, that's not my person. That's absolutely not my person. So when he was like,
I
want
to see
fine.
Laura in therapy, Jeff. Go ahead.
I was about to say, the last guest that we had 2 weeks ago is therapy Jeff. He's a therapist that we had an amazing conversation with him. But it's funny because one of his whole things is asking all these questions about people's exes. And he like wants to know. So, but he... To your point, he wouldn't be your person. Like, that's valid for him.
Yeah.
And this is valid for you.
And that, I think that's an important point too, that doesn't make him wrong. That means he's following what he needs to do in a relationship. And that's great. That's, you get to, like, when it comes to the rules, like we were talking about, you get to make your own rules. Like, those are the rules that matter. So for you, you might have some deal breakers and you might have things that really matter to you. Follow that. Like, do you need to do what feels right to you? And yeah. even if it doesn't make sense to anybody else, or even if all of the experts tell you, oh, that's wrong. That's why you're single, because you shouldn't be doing that. No, follow your instincts. Follow what it is that is going to help you feel comfortable in a relationship and help you get to know that person. And for me, when it came to my husband and the point that I was at, and having just been kind of burned by a person who tried to manipulate my past experiences, I didn't want to talk about it. And I just didn't think it was any of his business. I also had finally told myself that my past experiences did not dictate my future success in relationships. And so I no longer was looking at my past as, well, this is what's going to hold me back. It was just, It just was stuff that happened. It wasn't indicative of my future success. And so we didn't talk about it, and we got to know each other. And, you know, I slowly started telling him more and more. And when it came to the point that he knew that I had never had a serious relationship, he was surprised, because, you know, he'd gotten to know me and we were obviously very close at this point, and he couldn't believe that nobody else had gotten to know me in the way he had and hadn't liked what they saw. But also he, you know, and this, I this was very important to me as well, because I kept thinking, well, if I've never had a relationship, I don't know, I'm not going to know how to do it. I'm not going to know how, when I finally do meet that person, I'm going to screw it all up, because I won't know. I won't have made all of my mistakes when I was younger and in relationships that didn't matter. And
yeah, that was going to be my next question for you, is like, is approaching that.
That scared me, that I was just going to be totally lost and totally learning as I went and make all these mistakes. And, you know, the two big things that my husband would say is, first of all, I can't believe that nobody else has seen what I saw in you. And I'm glad, because it meant that I got to meet you, but I'm shocked.
That's really sweet.
But also, you don't in any way seem like you've never been in a relationship. Like you are great at this relationship, if that makes sense. Like,
yeah, that's
and
nice
so it's, you know, we click together. We work well together. And I don't know if I could have had this, if I would have known how to do a relationship. If I'm doing a lot of air quotes here, because I feel like there's all these things that we say that, you know, are not, we put labels on so many things, but, you know, not knowing how to do a relationship, maybe with the wrong person, I would have made mistakes and it wouldn't have worked out, or they would have felt like, oh, she's too inexperienced for me. But I don't think at any point in our relationship has my experience or lack of actually come into play in any way. So the message that I try to tell women, and men too, but women are the ones who I primarily talk to, your past experiences do not dictate your future success. And that also goes for people who've had failed relationships. That doesn't mean that you're always going to have failed relationships. And, you know, it's funny, when I talk to women who've never had a relationship before and they feel like I had felt, that there's something wrong with them and that they're not going to be worthy of a relationship when it finally comes around because they haven't had this experience. It's like, okay. So your society is trying to tell us that somebody, because if you're dating somebody, they are single. They have not.
I would hope. Hopefully. I would say, yeah, exactly.
Hopefully. They have not had a successful relationship because it's ended. If they have had a relationship before, it's ended. For whatever reasons, it has ended. So we will call that an unsuccessful relationship by the standard of you're not married.
Right.
And so you're trying to tell me that somebody who's failed at something, and again, I say these words to support women who've never been in a relationship before. I do not believe that being in a relationship and breaking up means you failed. But if we just want to look at the basic facts, okay, those are failed relationships because you're not still together and you're not married. So you're trying to tell me that somebody who has a string of failed relationships is somehow more equipped and better at going into a new relationship than you, who doesn't have a failed relationship. Like, it just, it's so silly the way we break these things down, you know, because it's not black and white. It's not you're good at relationships and you're not. It just doesn't work that way. And so what matters most is that you own the timeline that you're on and that you own the situations that you have been in and that you don't feel you have to apologize for them. And you can go into the next opportunity feeling like this is a clean slate. This is a fresh start. And then what has happened before is not going to dictate what happens from here on out.
Yeah, it's like a similar mindset as I think about when people say to me like, well, you're single, how do you give dating advice? Mm-hmm. And they're like, well, I – like in people in my TikTok comments will be like, well, I – you know, I've been married for 20 years, so you should listen to me. And I'm like, that's amazing for you. But like that doesn't mean you're an expert.
No.
Like that's – that you – great. Good job. You probably got real lucky if you met somebody at 19 that you ended up being with for the rest of your life. Like, wow, that's lucky. I'm very happy for you. But like it doesn't mean that you know how to approach dating.
Yeah.
Or alternatively, I would say maybe they do. I would say, no, okay, for sure. Start a TikTok account.
It just doesn't mean that they do. Like it's right, not – correlation does not imply causation.
Yes. I think also, they know their relationship. They know what worked for them. And so like I feel none of us, no matter what our experience is, can tell people what to do based on our experiences alone, you know, because everybody is unique. Everybody's experiences are different. And trying to tell people like these blanket statements of this is how you date, this is how you find love, this is how you, you know, are a successful married couple. Well, that might have worked for you, but that might not work for somebody else. So can we please acknowledge the fact that everybody is living their own unique life and that means they're living by their own unique rules. They're looking for their own unique things. The things that work for them don't necessarily work for others. And that's okay. Just because somebody's life experiences does not mirror your own, does not make them wrong or weird or anything. It just means that's just how it is. That's just what their life is. And I feel like that is it, from dating on to every other aspect of life. I feel like if we could all just kind of sit back and realize that our own experiences do not mean it's what everybody else has to have, we would be so much happier and so much more content if we could acknowledge that everyone is living their own unique experience. And just because you haven't felt it does not mean that it's not valid for them.
Yeah. Or the other way too, like comparing yourselves to other people and thinking like, you know, they have what I want. You know, I'm not there yet. That must be so much better.
Yes. Yes, exactly. And just, yeah, that must be so much better.
How do you encourage people to balance pursuing and prioritizing what they want, a partner and maybe a family, but also making their life full should that not happen for them?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's a really important question because there is this kind of like large belief that either you are happily single or you want a partner, that you cannot have the two. And that somehow if you actually do want a partner, it means you can't be happy as a single person. I firmly believe that every person who wants to have and wants to find a partner and wants to be in that loving, committed, healthy relationship, whatever it looks like to you, I believe you're going to find that person at some point. I believe that it will happen. I just can't tell you when. We just don't know when it's going to happen. So in the meantime, what do we do? What do we do that makes us happy? What are the things that we can control? Because we can't, and Allie, you mentioned it. You said luck. Like the people, somebody who met somebody at 19, like you got.
Yeah.
No matter when you meet your person, there's luck involved in that. And if you happen to have met them when you were 20 or 25 or 30, congratulations, a little bit of luck was on your side that's the time that you met your person. I feel incredibly lucky that I met my husband at 35 and a half. There's just, it didn't mean that I was finally like ready for a relationship. I'd done all the work and I finally was capable of being in a relationship. No, it meant I had done some of that for sure, but there was luck. He was brought into my life at that point. Our paths crossed at that point. Some people get lucky and it happens a lot earlier. But it doesn't mean that, you know, they are on some higher level of personal understanding that they were then ready to have a relationship. No, there's a lot of luck that's involved that falls into that place. So while you wait for your person to come along to have that happen in your life, what are the things that you can control? Because we can't control when he or she arrives. We cannot control that. So it's so important to control the things you can control and to identify what those things are. And to not feel like if you focus on those things that you are pushing back the possibility of meeting that person. If you focus on what you can control and what makes you happy, you are not becoming this selfish person who doesn't have room to let somebody else into their life. You will when it's the right person. It doesn't mean that you don't deserve to be happy right now with the things that are within your control. So I work with a lot of women on identifying what it is we can control versus what we can't and how we really focus on what we can control. Because the crazy thing is when we make ourselves happy, when we do things that give us fulfillment, when we feel good about who we are right now, we are in such a better place when that person does come around. We'll be meeting them from a place of, I am confident in who I am. I don't need you. I want you in my life if this is the right fit. And that means this person is meeting such a good version of, they're meeting the real version of yourself and a happy version of yourself, a content version of yourself, a confident version of yourself. So it's so important for you to be able to listen to what it is that you want and you need. And it's actually, I believe, going to help you find that person. And when you do find that person, have it be much more of the success that you want than if you are just telling yourself, I am nothing without this person. I have my whole life. I wake up in the morning thinking, how do I meet this person? I go to bed at night dreaming about what are the things that I'm doing wrong? What do I need to do instead? And not actually focusing on the things that we want and that we need as our own individual.
I love that. I feel like that's like the perfect.
That's the brand too.
Like, yeah, we love that's that. Like the, we love that. That's like the perfect soundbite to wrap all of this up is like, yes, that exactly that. Mic drop, goodbye.
Yeah. And we're done here. That's it.
We're done. We've solved all the problems.
Exactly. And you know, I think that's important too. I do want to say, you know, there isn't this point. If you are single and you are struggling with being single and you want to be in that relationship and you have questions about why you're not, which is human, that is just a normal thing to feel that way. There's never going to be a moment where you get to this point of, yeah, I'm totally cool with not having a relationship. Everything's great. Right. I love my life. Yeah. I don't need that. I think that a lot of times we feel that if we ever have these moments of thinking, oh God, I do wish I had that, that we have failed ourselves then, or all this work that we've done is all for nothing. We're going to have those feelings. Those feelings are so normal and they're so understandable and they're so valid. We're just trying not to live in those feelings on a 24/7 basis, you know, but it is okay to want to be in a relationship and to not feel great all the time about being single. That's totally okay and totally normal. And we need to cut ourselves some slack. We need to show ourselves some grace. We need to be honest with ourselves about the realities of life, that we are complex people. We can have complex emotions and feelings. We can be very happy with ourselves and yet also have moments where, oh, it's Valentine's Day and I'm alone. You know what? Yeah. This does suck. This sucks. I feel bad it's about like, this. That's okay.
It's like an and not an or. Yeah, like you totally. Can be happy and want something. And I think the narrative that like, oh, well, if you know, if you're not happy alone, then you're never going to be happy with someone, or like you have to fully love yourself, or like because you want a relationship means you don't fully love yourself. Exactly. Like, no, that's not true.
Exactly. Yep, exactly. And there's so many things that we feel and so many things that we experience and go through. And I am all about validating those and embracing them and not trying to tell ourselves, oh, that's wrong. I can't feel that way. I have to stop feeling that way. We have to acknowledge how we feel. I'm very big into like toxic positivity is so damaging. It tells people that you have to be happy all the time. Everything has to be good. We can't talk about the tough times. We have to talk about the tough times in order to get through to the happier times. We have to be able to grieve things that we don't have. We have to be able to acknowledge what it is that we don't have. As a very brand new mom, I am grieving my previous life. Mm. I have had to give myself permission to mourn this really great life that I had, that I had no responsibilities to a tiny human. And it kind of surprised me, but I have had to give myself permission and space to grieve that, even though I finally have this thing that I wanted for so long. We have to cut ourselves some slack, really. We all could do a little more or a lot more of that on a regular basis.
Yeah. Well, amen. Laura, can you tell our listeners where to find you, contact you?
Yes, definitely. Well, I am, I'm on Instagram, at Laura B. Behnke. The last name is Behnke. I am, as we're recording this, I'm on maternity leave, so I'm not posting as frequently, but I will be, and you can still find me there. You can send me a message through Instagram. I will get back to you at some point. And there's also my website, laurabehnke.com. That has all the information on how to work with me and the various things that I offer. And I also have a podcast as well called the Life Actually Podcast, which is a conversation each week. We're on hiatus right now again because of the maternity leave, but it's a conversation each week with a different woman. All we do is we talk about her story. We talk about her experience and what she's been through. And I firmly believe that when we hear more experiences that other people have, and we find out what they actually have gone through, it helps us feel a little bit better about our own, because we start to realize that there is no normal. There's no one way to do anything. There's no one way to find success, to find happiness, to find romance. There's no one way. So anyway, that's the Life Actually Podcast. You can find that wherever you get podcasts.
Great name, by the way.
Thank you.
I like that.
Well, yeah, I mean, my company is the Life Actually Company, because there's the life you thought you would have, and then there's your life actually. And I believe the actually.
Yeah, that's awesome.
The actually is where the magic happens. That's where your life actually comes from, that the actually, once you choose to accept the actually and embrace it.
Incredible. Well, Laura, thank you so much again for being here. This was amazing. We loved hearing your story, and I know the listeners are going to too.
Thank you. It was so nice to chat with you guys. I love your podcast. I love the messages that you are sending. I'm so glad we got to chat. I feel like we're so in the same, on the same wavelength.
I know, it's funny. Our listeners always call us out, where it's like, all of you are just like, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Sure, yes, yes.
Yeah. We just agree with each other all the time.
Yeah, but it's great.
I'm fine with it.
Yeah.
Well, everyone enjoy. Happy Valentine's Day. Happy Super Bowl Sunday. It's a good weekend.
It's a good weekend. Bye.